everyone. Well, welcome back to Stutter Talk at episode 615 for March 26th, 2017. The No One Has a Crystal Ball edition with my hero, Phil Schneider. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Peter. Great to be with you.
Oh, I'm so honored to have you back on Stutter Talk. This topic came up today and you were the first name, the first person, the first soul that popped into my head. So I'm so glad that you're going to be joining us today.
I appreciate the opportunity always to share with you.
We're going to discuss the promises and predictions that professionals such as speech language pathologists sometimes make to people who stutter and their families. Phil Schneider is a board-certified specialist and mentor in fluency and fluency disorders and has been working in private practice for more than 40 years with children and adults who stutter and with many other clients. Dr. Schneider is an associate professor emeritus of communication disorders at Queen's College, and with Ori Schneider is creator of the films Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story, and Going with the Flow, A Guide to Transcending Stuttering. That first one there, Phil, Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story, my single favorite stuttering film of all time. Thank you for what you do.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so let's get rolling. So, Phil, I invited you on air today because a mother shared with me recently that when her child who stutters was 3 years old, the evaluating speech language pathologist said that the child, quote, would never have the chance to speak normally. Start us off on this. What do you make of that quote, and where do you want to take it, Phil?
I think it's extremely common that as professionals, and not just our profession, speech language pathology, but other professions and medical professions, are asked to become future tellers. And I guess I want to start out by reminding myself and my friends and colleagues that a professional license doesn't grant us the power of prophecy. Future telling is a very unreliable kind of business at best, and at worst, it can be hurtful. So some of the predictions that we might make about something getting better or staying the same or, God forbid, getting worse, can actually, just making that prediction, can increase suffering of people who stutter and their families. And it can lead to unwise decision making, certainly something we don't want to do. For example, a negative prediction can cause people to become discouraged and depressed and even prevent people from seeking professional support. Positive predictions can also lead to amazing disappointment when things don't work out the way everybody would desire. It can make people blame themselves for premature failure long before they're capable of making the changes that they might make at another point in life. So I'd like to just take a moment to look at this whole issue of predicting the future as it relates to human beings unfolding. And I guess the easiest thing for us to look at is our own lives. Could we have predicted the most significant things in our lives from some particular variable in our past? Has our journey, as we've grown, been a predictable phenomena in some logical, linear manner? And of course, my feeling is that it's not the way it unfolds. And there are so many opportunities in nature to look at this. So one of the ones that I came up with before we get back to the stuttering is, when you look at a butterfly flying in the sky, would you be able to have predicted that by looking at a caterpillar crawling on the ground? Life is not linear, and how we get from one point to another is actually often paradoxical. It's the reverse of logic. Challenges that look like they can really hurt us, and stuttering is one of them, often can build traits like courage and strength and determination and confidence, appreciation, compassion, patience, and an incredible sense of mission, which can become something that we're so grateful for in our lives. So let me turn it to stuttering specifically. As a trait, stuttering is in fact characterized by unpredictability. There are moments of instability from one sound to the next, and moments of perfect stability from one moment to the next. The frequency with which stuttering occurs varies one day to the next day, and one moment to the next moment, sometimes completely free of interruptions, other moments completely halted. So the trait itself is characterized by unpredictability. the quote in the financial world, which might address this, is that yesterday and today's performance does not predict tomorrow. Stuttering is like that. Let's take a couple of real life stories close to home. When we met, if we had met, Charles Van Riper when he was a young man, a child, a teenager, even a mature man, and seen him as somebody struggling with severe stuttering, would we have been able to predict that he would become the founder of a profession which helps people with speech disorders and go on to become a gifted therapist, teacher, researcher? And if we had met Joseph Biden as a young man stuttering and struggling with it, would we have predicted him to become a public official, a senator, and a vice president? And really close to home, my dear friend Peter Reitzis on the other side of this phone conversation, struggling with fear and shame and anxiety related to stuttering, would we ever have predicted from that he would go on to become a gifted colleague, a gifted speech-language pathologist, a man who writes books to help others know how to help children who stutter, and someone who creates this very international broadcast as a forum for dialogue about stuttering? How would one thing predict the next? These stories are not exceptions. Many people, in fact, become great, not in spite of a challenge such as stuttering, but because of a challenge, and in particular, stuttering. Many people, and this is untold in our literature, why and how is it that so many people who grew up stuttering become extraordinary communicators and extraordinary people, of course? That story, I think, is yet to be told. So what are some of the possibilities for outcomes of people who are dealing with stuttering? Well, there are several. It's very common that the stuttering itself and the negative feelings associated with it could diminish and maybe even disappear over time. That's common. Sometimes, in fact, it may disappear in response to a particular treatment, and sometimes it might diminish or disappear without any obvious cause. Sometimes it may last a lifetime regardless of what anybody does or does not do about it. And sometimes stuttering has zero impact on a person's life, and at other times it can lead to great suffering and deprivation. One person's story does not predict someone else's. And I've been working with people who stutter, Peter mentioned, 40 years. In fact, I started in 1971, so it's 45 years. And I still cannot predict one person's future from what I see at one moment in time. I find it more helpful, actually, not to try to predict their future. So let's talk about how we as professionals might think of responding to the very normal, common questions about what's going to happen in the future. My first comment about that is, don't take it so literally and think you have to answer the unanswerable. Instead, listen to the underlying message. What is being conveyed to us? What is this person really communicating? So we should explore their question, and we should empathize with it. Well, that sounds like a very important thing for you to ask. What are your thoughts? Because they're talking really, the question comes from fear and concern. And by giving them a chance to talk about it, it brings that fear and concern, and it brings those feelings out into the fresh air. And that's a very important part of the process, which we could stop and abort by trying to come up with some answer, which we're making up out of the blue. So we can ask other people, well, what are you really thinking? What is your belief at this point? And then we can bring it gradually around to, well, what are some options for how we could deal with it right now? And what do you think might be the best thing to do at the moment? What are the possibilities? So we wind up in a partnership with them, talking about what they're concerned about, but not trying to just come up with a simplistic answer. Our language should always be positive, gentle, and always, always proceeding with humility, because we just don't have that kind of ability to predict the future with a crystal ball. Being optimistic is justified, but saying that you know what's going to happen, I think is not. So I guess my wrap-up on that would be that the reality is everybody does change. Change is inevitable. Everybody does it in their own way. Everybody does it in their own time. And we cannot predict this, except that we know it'll happen.
I really enjoyed hearing your thoughts on that. You said so much. I'll just repeat just one of the amazing things you said, that one person's story does not predict another person's story. I think our field needs to hear that more and more. So thank you for sharing that today, Phil.
You're welcome, and thanks for drawing that out. There's a lot of work that's been done in research to try to understand predictability and to try to come up with ways to make predictions. And I think we've taken that kind of literally, and there's a problem in that research and how we interpret it. For example, work with young preschool children who stutter, looking at them over time and collecting many, many other variables and seeing what co-varies. You wind up with group statistics of correlational studies, and you can't use group statistics to predict an N of one.
Yes, that is so very true, and I just hope your message gets out there more and more. This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitz with Dr. Phil Schneider. Dr. Schneider has 45 years of experience in private practice working with people who stutter and their families and so much more. So, Phil, in a second, I'm going to ask you why you think speech-language pathologists sometimes feel the need to make predictions, but I'm just going to let that hang for a moment and first share with you a quote. So we got such amazing feedback on Facebook about this topic. So Jack Henderson, a speech-language pathologist who stutters in Tennessee, wrote, quote, "My SLP, who I saw as a teenager, told my mom that if my mom had brought me to her when I was little, I wouldn't still be stuttering. That gave my mom a sizable amount of guilt for a while." I mean, that just breaks my heart. I mean, parents carry around so much guilt, and then, you know, the speech language pathologist perhaps accidentally puts more guilt upon them. What do you make of that quote?
Well, first of all, Jack, I think it's really tremendous that you shared that story, because it's so easy for us to say something that could inadvertently be hurtful. And I'm sure the speech pathologist didn't have any intention to be hurtful. When we have parenting, it's a very tough job, and we tend to feel responsible for all the imperfections that come along with bringing a child, rearing a child in this world. And so it's scary enough to be a parent, and to be a parent of a child who suddenly has a problem that looks pretty spooky, that could be a big challenge for the child. So it's a very vulnerable time for a parent. And the last thing we want to do is in any way imply or support the idea that it's their fault. And I think that's an easy hole to fall into. And of course, it's not the parent's fault. And of course, we really have no way to know if doing something differently before or at this point or some other point would have been helpful. But certainly we have to be extremely careful to be supportive of parents and to realize that for a parent to have a new problem in their life, to have a child who's struggling with something, it's very anxiety provoking. We have to go very gently and be very, very supportive. Gentle and supportive are the key words.
Would you hazard a guess, Phil, of why you think that some professionals would make a prediction or would say to a parent, if you had only brought him to me earlier, he wouldn't stutter anymore? Like, why would somebody feel the need to do that?
I have a feeling, I have a sense of an answer to that. I think that very often we as the professionals are as anxious as the people who come to us, as the parents or the child or the young person, that we're afraid that we'll be inadequate. And so we're looking in a way to divert blame for things that we know we don't have perfect answers for. So I think very often we feel challenged that we're going to get questions we don't know how to answer, and we should have an answer. We should have an easy answer. It should come out smooth. We should be able to articulate it so that we feel valid. But I think it's really a defensive kind of move. I think we have to listen to ourselves when we're sitting and listening to other people and hear what they're saying and how it affects us, and not react to our own feeling of how it affects us. But to go very slowly and to realize it's about the other person, not about us. So I think very often we say things that don't work out well because we're being defensive. So we say something, we don't mean to be a wise guy and pretend we know something we don't know, but we feel that we should be able to do that. And I think our graduate training and our culture as a profession lead us to think we should have simple answers to often unanswerable questions, rather than see parents' questions as an opportunity for dialogue to help them explore what they're feeling and they're thinking.
Phil, you hit the nail on the head there. I just find myself nodding along. I completely agree. So I agree with you that some speech language pathologists, perhaps very many, are as anxious as parents, are defensive. And I think you just said this. It seems to come back to this idea that our field really thinks we're supposed to make the stuttering stop. And that's something that's really hard to do. And sometimes when you try to do that, it doesn't help. And so I don't know if you would agree with that, but I think the defensiveness often stems from this idea that we're supposed to take the stuttering away, and we don't know how to do that. And it's really hard.
Well, we do know how to make stuttering stop, and we could be 100% successful. If you tell a person, do not speak, they will not stutter.
Yes, you're right. I knew where you're going with that. Yep.
I figured we know each other long enough to know that. But I think the issue is that working with people who stutter is a very humbling experience, because we don't have the kind of power that we would like to have. We would like to help people who tend to stutter not continue to have that tendency, because it's a challenge to live with that. It can be irritating. It could be frustrating. It could be humiliating. It doesn't have to be, but it could be. So I think we do want to help make people's lives more comfortable, and we feel that if people are coming to us, I think it's logical and normal to feel like we should be able to deliver. But the reality is we can't always deliver. When we go to a physician, we expect them to take away our illness, and sometimes they can help us cope with it, and sometimes they can't take away the illness. They can try, but these are very humbling, kinds of professions.
Mm. Yes. Can I read a few more quotes to you here?
Great.
So Kelly Snow in North Carolina wrote, and Kelly went to school when he was a child in the school district I work in. So I'm pretty sure this happened in my very school district. So Kelly wrote on Facebook, I had an SLP tell me after meeting me for the first time and doing an evaluation that she was going to fix me. I went back to class, told my teacher, who was also a family friend. It was handled, and the SLP apologized. What do you make of a professional meeting a child who stutters for the first time and saying to that child, I am going to fix you?
Well, again, we can look at that. We can speculate on that, what motivated people to say things. Then we can talk about what we think about it. It may have been motivated, may have come from a very passionate place. Perhaps this individual speech therapist, speech pathologist, has had some very positive, exciting experiences and meets this young person who exhibits some stuttering, feels like, wow, I have the power because I had a couple of good experiences to help this person transform themselves from someone who stutters to someone who doesn't. And they might have wanted to show confidence and motivate the person by saying, I can really help you change this in a very significant way. So it could come from a very heartfelt, passionate, enthusiastic place based on some positive experiences. So I think we're by nature a pretty kind, benevolent culture of professionals, even if we sometimes do something that may go awry. Telling someone you don't know that you've just met for a moment that you can fix them, first of all, implies that you think they're broken. And second, it's a bit simplistic and naive, because even if you do have a positive journey with this person in a therapist-therapy relationship, it takes time, it's imperfect, there's ups and downs, it's a long journey, things don't happen in a flash. So it seems to be, at best, a little bit naive. From the point of view of the young person, the youngster in this case, who seems to realize right away that what the other person said was unrealistic and unkind and naive, and feels a need to sell someone else and assert themselves. It sounds like that's a very strong, healthy person. So that's Kelly, and hats off to Kelly for speaking up about it. And I suspect she helped the speech therapist in that story learn a lot.
Such a great point. And I'm going to say hats off to you and to everyone in the self-help stuttering community, because Kelly is a long-time participant and his family in self-help for people who stutter. And my guess is he learned the strength to speak up, or at least he partially learned the strength to speak up because of all the great support he has gotten. That's just a guess. But I think that, you know, our strong children, that might be a reflection of some of the strong opportunities they've had. And or maybe it's just innate in him. But I know he's gotten some great support. So I think it's neat to just mention that. Let me ask.
I just want to add a piece to what you said. So first of all, I agree that the various vehicles that are available now for people to support each other, for the there are now communities of people who stutter and families that's there's no price you could put on that. It's so wonderful, different organizations that provide those opportunities, and they can help people realize, they can help people validate their feelings about what's going on between them and professionals. But I have a feeling here that this youngster, Kelly as a youngster, intuitively had that sense of internal validation and the need and the right to speak their mind. I think there are people who stutter who are very strong, assertive people, as there are people who stutter who are not, or are less so. My hunch in this story is we have here a strong, assertive person who will teach others a lot about the strength of people who stutter.
So if you don't mind, I'm going to agree with you, and I'm just going to tack on to that too, that it's going to sound egotistical, but I think of myself as a strong, polite, assertive person. However, meeting you and work, so for those who don't know, you were my speech therapist. You helped me change my life around, and meeting you sort of unlocked that door, which enabled me to be strong and assertive with stuttering. Because I didn't know I could be that way with stuttering until I met you.
Knowing you for many years now, I can't imagine you ever being any other way than extremely assertive. Speaking truth to power seems to come so naturally to you.
Well, from my experience, you unlocked that door for me. It was there, but you unlocked the. And I know you don't like to take credit, but you were the person on, you know, in the chair across from me. So
I feel privileged to have had that opportunity. Yeah. And of course, the connection with you is just wonderful.
So I have a bunch of questions I want to ask you, but before I do, I just want to read parts of two things that Stutter Talk listeners shared on Facebook. So Ian Mahler in Utah writes, "I went through speech therapy for most of my childhood up until most of high school. Throughout that time, my therapist would tell me I would stop stuttering around the age of 20. That came and went, and I battled on for the longest time, wondering if my therapist was wrong or if I wasn't doing something right." And I'll just add that James McClure in New Mexico, he wrote something a bit similar on Facebook, and he ended his by saying, "At age 28, I was a slow learner. I decided that perhaps I was not going to outgrow stuttering and started speech therapy." What do you make of this idea that, you know, a speech therapist tells a young child who stutters, you know, don't worry, when you get older, it's going to stop?
I think the comments from Jim and from Ian are great examples of how perhaps flippant or enthusiastic or whatever comments from us as professionals about what's going to happen in the future can impair or limit wise decision making on the part of individuals who are dealing with stuttering. In the story that Jim tells of waiting to the age of 28 to get some support and some guidance, maybe that was the right time for him, or maybe he would have benefited from some support of some sort sooner. And perhaps if he had not been given a model which somebody fished out of the sky about what was going to happen at some point in the future in his life, he might have gone down a slightly different road. Of course, we can't know that. And in Ian's case, being told that by 20 things would be different after years of treatment, perhaps the years of treatment would have been he would have been saved that time. If he wasn't offered that future crystal ball idea. So I think that these are all great examples of how fishing out of one's own imagination as to what's going to happen for another person's life in the future can impair people's decision making along the way, rather than providing people an opportunity to talk about their own fears of dealing with stuttering, their own feelings about it, how they're coping, coming up with simple answers about what's going to happen in the future. So I think, again, going back to my comments before, when someone raises an issue of what's the future, it's an opportunity for us to engage them in dialogue so they can think about how are they handling the present, how would they like to be handling the situation in the future, what are their fears, what are their hopes, what are their wishes, what are they willing to change. You know, it's a great opener for valuable life-altering dialogue, as opposed to something that says to us, make up a fantasy of that we as individuals, as professionals, should make up a fantasy, a prophecy of what's going to be in the future. I think we need to be careful with that.
And Phil, I'm just going to observe that when I was a kid growing up, and I know other people who stutter who share this same experience, that I was waiting for something or someone to take my stuttering away. And I just really thought as a kid that when I was in junior high, I wouldn't stutter. When I was in high school, I wouldn't stutter. When I was in college, I wouldn't stutter. And then I was graduating from college and I still stuttered and I needed help. So waiting for me was not healthy at all. All right, so we brought this topic in with a quote that I'll just reread. It was from a mother who said that when she took her child for an evaluation at 3 years old, the speech language pathologist said that the child would never have the chance to speak normally. Now, I'm open to the possibility that the therapist might say, "I never said that." I think that's possible. I think the mom's telling the truth, but it makes me wonder, do you think our field has to sort of double down on thinking about how we talk about stuttering? Because clearly, even if those words were not said, this mother heard that at 3 years old, her child would never speak normally.
I think, first of all, we're doing this show because we both believe that this idea of making predictions could be hurtful and that we need to slap ourselves in our faces to remind ourselves to be careful about that stuff. But let me go back and address this issue. Let's assume that a professional sees a three-year-old child stuttering and makes a statement like it's always going to be this way. I think our professional training and our research models might in fact encourage that kind of thinking, that if you look at a child and you take their background history and you find out family members stutter and it started at this age and it's this type of stutter or that type of stutter and it happens this frequently, then it's likely it's going to continue. That we have all this literature that attempts to say what the correlates are. If they have Artic problems, if they have language problems, if they have family history, if it's a boy, all this sort of stuff. So I think that we are led down the road to think that we can make logical linear predictions. Of course, when I heard that comment that you shared, that somebody said, a professional said to a parent of a three-year-old that they're always going to speak that way, it upsets me to the core, and it almost makes me fall out of the chair, and it makes me embarrassed and angry, and like I want to talk up about it. So that's kind of why I decided I would join you in this show. There is no correlation between the severity of a three-year-old stuttering and whether they'll retain it or not. And the issue really, again, becomes what's the wisest thing to do in helping this parent respond to this dilemma that's arrived in their lives. So I think, yes, we need to be very careful, and the show is important if it just makes us think about that more carefully. Of course, that parent's going to ask us, do you think my kid's going to keep this forever? Because they may become very... they may start to remember a college friend, an adult friend, a spouse, or their own life story growing up with stuttering. It may be very frightening. So this, we need to remind ourselves, is an opener for a conversation, which gives the parent the chance to talk about their fears and their concerns, and ultimately lead to what is the most reasonable course of action, which is a decision that should be come to jointly between the professional and the parent.
You said a lot of important things there. I'm going to just pull out one of them about how there's no correlation between the amount of stuttering a three-year-old has and whether they will continue to stutter or not. And it's such an important point. And it just seems like so many of our colleagues just assume that if a three-year-old is stuttering a lot, that means that there's a greater chance they're going to grow up to be adults who stutter. And it's just something that we have to deal with in our field.
The second part of that is that the assumption of whether a person will continue to stutter or not does not tell us whether they'll be a person who is bothered by it or is in some way challenged by it, or someone who is not, or someone who becomes great because of it. So this idea of prediction, we can't predict whether the trait itself sticks around or not, or how it will change. We also cannot predict how a person will feel about it and to what extent the presence of that trait will perturb a person's life or, in fact, empower a person's life. That's also not linearly predictable.
Phil, I know you've got to go, so let me just share these two things with you. So Adriana Lynn, a speech language pathologist, courageously shared on Stutter Talk's Facebook page, "I'll confess, as an SLP, I dismissed minimally helped a young adult who came to me because he didn't stutter enough. I know better now, and I'm happy that I've continued to learn and grow. To this day, I wish I could call him and apologize." And Amy Goldman Graham, who is a speech language pathologist, I believe in Colorado, wrote, "I'm an SLP and these stories are killing me. Can I apologize on behalf of all SLPs everywhere?" What do you make of those brave comments?
Wow. I think each of us needs to have a lot of humility, and we always should feel a little bit apologetic for not having been able to be better in caring for people that we care for. And that applies to our personal lives as well. We all miss the boat on a daily basis. So I think that the desire to say, "I'm sorry, I wish I could have done more," or "I could have not said that," or "I could have gone down a different road," or "I could have known this earlier on," that's a very healthy desire as long as it doesn't cripple you. Because it means you want to grow, you want to become more sensitive, more thoughtful, more caring, more optimistic, a better listener. All of us are growing all the time. And when you go into a profession and you get a license to practice, they say you're going into practice. And, you know, you go back after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 45 years, you know, you feel you can do, hopefully, God willing, you can do more now than you could have when you were earlier on in your career. But that's the way it goes. So we apologize that we were beginners when we were beginners. And because we did that, we got better, and we were willing to say we could see a better way to go. That's humility. That's the path of growth.
That is a great place to end it, Phil, on such a positive note, on the path of growth. This is Stutter Talk. Our guest today for the No One Has a Crystal Ball edition is Dr. Phil Schneider, with 45 years of experience working with people with communication challenges. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Peter. Take care.